Hello, and welcome to a new season of the Dark Money Files podcast, where we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Well, hello, Ray, and it's just good to be back.
Isn't it? Now then, Graham, season 9 this is, and we're just a whisker away from our 100th episode.
I know. It just doesn't seem long ago we were starting our first episode. Kind of privately wondering if we'd find enough to talk about for 10.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right, but we're still here, and it turns out there's plenty more to delve into, including today's topic.
Yes, electronic ID and digital customer management. Mm. Ray, this is space age stuff.
It certainly is, Graham. The digital revolution has been a relatively quiet one in our industry, I have to say, but its effects have been wide-ranging, and in many ways, regulation is only just catching up.
Well, I think you're right, Ray. For me, that's most evident in the regulator's approach to channel risk, where non-face-to-face business is expected to garner a higher risk rating than traditional over-the-counter relationships.
Mm, and in the world where we've spent 2 years and more battling a pandemic, that stance does seem hopelessly out of touch. I think COVID has accelerated digital take-up, but it was already a well-established trend, and it's always seemed inevitable.
I agree, and although regulation has been slow to embrace the brave new world, regulators haven't.
Mm.
All the big national regulators have established teams focused on emerging technologies, looking to guide and foster innovation in regtech and related developments. Regulation itself lags, and this can be frustrating for firms wanting to adapt their business models and compliance approaches ahead of the curve.
Mm. It's a real constraining factor in the uptake of potentially game-changing technology. But the good news is that there's a growing body of relevant guidance that's clarifying the way ahead.
I think this starts then, doesn't it, with the FATF paper of a couple of years ago?
Yes, Graham, that would be the paper Guidance on Digital Identity from March 2020. This followed private sector consultation and across 100 or so pages looks at the concepts behind digital ID and how this addresses FATF standards. It aims to inform governments and regulated institutions on whether digital identity is appropriate for use in customer due diligence.
Mm, and there was a financial inclusion angle to this too, wasn't there, Ray?
FATF noted that there were 1.7 billion unbanked adults worldwide and that 26% of them cited lack of documentation as the primary barrier they faced. Now, lacking traditional ID needn't be a barrier if we can rely on robust digital identity instead.
Which is great, I guess, providing we can still guard against financial crime.
Well, yes, and traditionally, this has been the stopping point. I mean, right from the start of regulation, identification and verification using government-issued ID or equivalent has been very much the sine qua non of CDD, hasn't it?
Yeah, and CDD needs a sine qua non.
Well, it doesn't everything.
Well, I think it does, and it certainly has, right?
Mm.
And of course, for many of us, it's hard to see any alternative.
Hmm. Let me ask you this. Would you say traditional ID and V is foolproof, Graham?
No, I wouldn't.
Why is that?
Well, all sorts of reasons, Ray. I mean, what you have to do when considering the ID is to look at the customer in the eye and compare what you see to the photo on the ID. You need to decide if they are close enough to be reliably the same person. Mm-hmm. You need to determine with reasonable certainty that the document is a genuine one. Check that it's valid at the time it's presented and that the various data it shows is in accord with the information we have from the customer and from any other sources. There is a lot you can potentially get wrong there.
Mm, I mean, there really is, Graham. For one thing, which of us is an expert in authenticating ID documents from a range of countries issued at different times, potentially over many decades in multiple versions? Do you know what a 1954 Belgian passport looks like? I don't.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely, I do.
I mean, even equipped with a fantastic resource like the EU's Prado system, that's a big ask, especially given how good some of the fakes are becoming.
Yes, and for people unfamiliar with Prado, we're not talking about the museum in Madrid. It is the public register of authentic identity and travel documents online system. I'm sure you all knew that. Most people will have or will want to bookmark on their browsers if they have to check ID documents as part of their job at all.
Yeah, it's a fantastic site. And in conjunction with the human eye and the human brain, it used to be the best possible means to verifying identity. Anything short of that, where the institution didn't come face to face with the customer to identify them up front, was considered less effective. And it's called out as a higher risk factor in pretty much all the guidance that predates this FATF paper.
But of course, technology has gradually come in that first equaled and now arguably surpasses human accuracy.
And I think that arguably is nearing its sell-by date, Graham.
Yeah. So if you've got proper electronic ID and V in place, is non-face-to-face distribution still a higher risk factor?
I'm going to quote directly from the FATF paper, Graham. Here's what it says. If, as a matter of internal policy or practice, non-face-to-face business relationships or transactions are always classified as high risk, consider reviewing and revising those policies to take into account that customer identification and verification measures that rely on reliable, independent digital ID systems with appropriate risk mitigation measures in place may be standard risk and may even be lower risk. End of quote.
Well, now that is quite a paradigm shift, isn't it, Ray?
It really is. But there are a few caveats and qualifications in there that we ought to look at.
Yes, I was struck by the phrase reliable independent digital ID systems. Can we expand on that at all?
FATF provides a little flowchart to help you arrive at a determination on this, actually, Graham.
Ah, yes. Now, I've seen it. Ultimately, there are three questions. The first is, does the government in question authorise the digital ID system for CDD use? If that's the case, away you go.
Yeah, hardly worth a flowchart, that one, was it?
Not really.
If not, the second and subsequent questions come into play, which is whether you understand the robustness and assurance levels of the system.
For instance, does the national government assure or audit or certify it in any way, or does a government-approved entity provide similar assurance? If you can't get the assurance that way, then you can undertake or commission your own assurance.
Yep. Then, assuming you can emerge from question two with a positive view on the robustness and assurance level of the system, you then have to form your own judgment on whether you are happy that the assurance level is sufficient for the money laundering and terrorist financing risks that you face in your firm.
Yes, right. And that's going to mean understanding exactly what those risks are, of course, which hopefully you've documented in your business-wide risk assessment, about which we have spoken at length.
Mm.
And that should give you a decent audit trail for the judgments you arrive at. The FATF paper is worth a detailed read because it gives lots of country-specific case studies.
Now, Graham, it's curious that FATF hints that digital ID might actually provide a lower risk solution than traditional face-to-face methods, isn't it?
It is, Ray, and it's a theme that the Wolfsburg Group really ran with in their recent paper with the snappy title of Wolfsburg Group Guidance on Digital Customer Lifecycle Risk Management. End of snappy title.
Well done.
That was released at the end of March 2022.
Hot off the press, then.
Well, indeed it is, Ray. And across 9 pages, it provides a bit of a map for firms to revolutionise their approach to CDD and ongoing monitoring of digital customers.
That's a big claim, Graham.
Yes, but justified, I think. So let me quote from the introductory section, which will give you some idea of the scope of this. It says the technology can, and I quote, provide the financial institution with an opportunity to build a dynamic understanding of customer risk, refresh relevant customer information on a targeted basis, and pursue new customers without face-to-face interaction, including the financially excluded, while focusing resources to address genuine financial crime threats. End of quote.
So what does this brave new world look like, Graham? How's it different from what firms are doing today?
Well, I think there are three key differences, Ray. The first is expanding concepts of identification and verification and increasing the emphasis on the importance of authentication.
And when you think about it, this is an obvious advantage of digital access to services, isn't it? In a traditional relationship, the whole face-to-face interaction may only happen fully at the start, with the institution then relying on a range of measures with a corresponding range of effectiveness for determining that the person who strolls into the branch or who phones up is the same person they saw X many years ago.
Well, yes, it is. And in a digital relationship, that risk is much more effectively managed. Authentication happens automatically every time the institution's service is accessed.
And that's pretty secure in most cases, isn't it, Graham? I mean, there are a whole suite of authentication measures typically used, including, you know, geolocation, face recognition, even behavioural analytics.
Yes, that's right. In many ways, it's harder to hack a well-built digital service than a well-built analogue one.
Here we have to introduce the concept of binding, don't we?
Oh, yes. That's the issue of authentication credentials at the point of initial acceptance. It's what allows you to subsequently determine each time the customer comes back that they are the same person you originally accepted. Provided that initial authentication is strong and features a range of measures like the liveliness check and authorizing access to phone data, the binding can give you a high level of confidence that the person accessing the customer's account is indeed the customer.
And FATF here seems to endorse the prevailing approach to post-binding authentications, don't they? The three-factor approach.
Yes, Ray. That's a combination of ownership factors, knowledge factors and inherent factors, or to put it another way.
And hopefully a more enlightening way.
Indeed, Ray. That means something you possess, like a cryptographic key on your device. It means something you know, like an old school password or PIN, and something that you are. Your biometric factors.
And biometric factors could be facial recognition or a fingerprint, could it?
It could, Ray. But increasingly, this will be supplemented with a range of data, including user behaviour, like how and when they tend to access their device and where they are when they do.
Okay, then. So in the new paradigm, we have more reliance on authentication. What's the second shift?
Well, that's building and maintaining what Wolfsburg calls a dynamic, more holistic customer risk profile.
Intriguing. Let's unpack that. Dynamic, more holistic?
Yeah. Well, let's do dynamic first. Right now, firms are tending to apply a static risk assessment based on a few data points applied at onboarding or at review, where the customer lives, what industry they're in, maybe the products they use, if they're corporate, what sort of business entity they are, and so on. Now, this rating determines the level of ongoing monitoring and allows firms to apply a risk-based approach. These basic customer attributes don't change very often, but when they do, there's an opportunity to reconsider the rating.
Yeah, and that's pretty much established practice, isn't it, across the industry?
It is, but digital financial services and the whole app ecosphere means that institutions have access to a lot more data points on an ongoing basis in real time. Or at least they can if the user has consented to sharing analytic data and isn't using VPNs and the like.
And the fact that they do use a VPN for a particular transaction would immediately put the institution on notice that there's a new risk factor.
Yeah, that's just one example, but it's how Wolfsburg envisions an institution using its access of data beyond just the usual KYC to inform its risk rating in real time. That's what they mean by more holistic. Wolfsburg also cites behavioural biometrics as a potential source of insights.
Yeah, like the angle the customer tilts the phone at habitually changes all of a sudden, or, you know, whether they're typing into information fields or pasting data they've presumably copied from elsewhere. These behaviours could flag a risk that the device has changed hands, so could trigger an authentication event in real time to limit any exposure if that proves to be the case.
Yes, and that brings us to the third shift in approach, which is to what Wolfsburg calls a targeted, disciplined approach to ongoing due diligence by refreshing customer data on a trigger rather than periodic basis, dedicating resources effectively to priority risks in real time. And that just sounds exciting.
Well, I mean, I was going to say that's actually really big, isn't it? And before we get carried away with the thought of the demise of the periodic review, it's worth reinforcing the need to have in place instead a targeted and disciplined approach to ongoing due diligence, right?
Yeah, you will need to be watching far more diligently and acting more quickly and reliably to changing risks if you're not going to have the safety net of a periodic review to rely on.
Yeah, it's like, how good do your fullbacks need to be for you to dispense with a goalkeeper? And I can't currently think of any football team who are in a position to sack their goalkeeper currently.
No, but that's not to say they might not be able to get there if they know it's a viable formation that would be available to them.
I mean, it's a fair discussion, Graham, and this is a concept which will take time to gain traction, and firms will want to take time to prepare their approaches and consider whether they might be able to go for it.
And can we offer any help to them in those deliberations, Ray?
Well, there's some really good guidance from Wolfsburg and FATF in these two papers, which would be a good starting point. And we've both seen some of the necessary systems and approaches being adopted here and there, particularly by the fintechs that we've worked with. So I reckon there's an episode there in which we add some direction to the roadmap. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea, Ray. And I think we could also help identify some of the pitfalls and hard decisions that might crop up along the way. Let's come back to this one, Ray.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you.